This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hello, hello, hello. This is episode number 60 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Ladies, I have a really big announcement to make, and I wanted to make it towards the end of the show, but I figured we should just get it out of the way now, because I know it's something that you guys have been wanting from me, and I know that I haven't always been the best friend, and I've kind of let you down in that regard, so I just figured I would get it out of the way right now. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Sure. You're all like really worried. So after much thought and careful consideration, I am on Snapchat.
No. Damn it, way. That means I'm the last one.
Hallie, get with it.
I wanted to be hashtag not last.
I've been on Snapchat for 12 hours and you guys haven't even added me that. I thought we were friends.
Was at work. Mm. I'll do it right now.
Right now. There better be Nobody a snap waiting for me when this show's over.
It doesn't say I have anybody that added me.
Because I didn't add you. You're supposed to add me.
See, you have to come to her.
Oh, that's... God. What's your name? I can guess.
It's the same as my Twitter name. I'm pretty consistent. But yeah, I just signed up for it. I've just been posting the most mundane things. I'm pretty sure I'm doing it wrong, but I am on Snapchat now, and I figured you guys would be so proud of me.
I'm so proud.
So now Hallie has to get on board with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I expect it by, like, tomorrow at the latest, how?
Okay.
Just don't do what I did. I didn't bother watching any tutorials or anything beforehand. So, like, I took some pictures, but I didn't know that they were going to post. And so I had somebody who I added, and they were like, hey, looking good. And I'm like, oh, you saw that? I'm like, that was a bad one. You should see me when I'm looking good. And so you got to be really careful that after you take the picture, sometimes it just goes, and even if it's not one you don't want. And so I'm still figuring out the kinks, but it's a lot of fun so far.
I can't wait. Yeah. I'm so excited.
So far today, I posted a picture of myself and a bag of apples.
Oh.
How about them apples?
Like, for the apples that... you bought?
Yes, or? They were. Okay. So I've been trying to eat better as well. So I've been going to the gym and I'm trying to eat better. And I've discovered Trader Joe's has these sliced apples. Because I'm a jerk. I won't eat a whole apple. Like, I won't do that. Like, if you go to the produce section, you grab an apple. I can't do that. But if you give me, like, a bag of sliced apples, I'm fucking in. I can't get enough of them. And so I had a bag of the sliced apples and I labeled them my new addiction. And so... So far,
they were apples you didn't have to work for?
Not really, no. I mean, I had to open them. They had the weird freaky Ziploc thing with the tab. That was a little work. But no, so it's just mostly just me and apples so far.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Can't wait.
It's a good starting place.
Exactly. So we've had a busy couple of days. It sounds like we all had some exciting things happen to us. So we're just going to take them in the order in which they happened. And we're going to start off with you, Katie. So, Katie, you got to make your debut at the Community Super League, and you also got to do coverage.
Yes, I did. It was really fun. I was glad that Paul Cheon was my partner because he'd done this many times before, it sounded like, and he kind of was very, very friendly. He carried us a little bit when I was like, I don't know how to do these transitions. but it was really fun. I'm not very familiar with the Storm deck that he was playing, so I was like trying to add in things, but I obviously was a little out of my depth some of the time, but it was very fun. Chat was pretty good overall, I think, so I loved watching you guys play and kind of not being a part of it, because I was just like, I was wondering what they're thinking right now, or what are they doing now, or this is taking a really long time, they must be having a heated discussion about this one. But it was really fun to just kind of watch it from an outside perspective, and I think it went pretty well. There was a couple times when the chat was like, she looks so disinterested. And I was like, well, he's been comboing for like 15 minutes. I'm just sitting here. I don't know how to be entertaining anymore. But it was good. Athena was very helpful. The whole thing was just really good.
Yeah, I have to say, from Chris and I, from the perspective of Chris and I, you must have been saying something funny because Athena was laughing and laughing and, and she has her setup in such a way where, like, we could hear her talking to you and Paul, but we couldn't hear you and Paul. So when Chris and I are trying to make all of our moves, we just keep hearing Athena laughing and laughing, and we're like, is she laughing at us or is she laughing at them? And so we just assume that you two are really entertaining because she seemed to be having a really good time working with you.
We were having some banter. There's definitely some smack talk going on. So I kept hearing her laugh, and then I heard her say something to you guys a couple times, and I think the chat was a little confused about the setup because they thought I could see Paul's hand and that I was playing and I was reading chat, and we tried to clarify a couple times what was going on, but there are still some people who are like, how is that fair?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the downside to sort of being a group like ours, especially because we're not in the same room. You know, Loading Ready Run plays together and MTA plays together, so it's a little different. But, you know, it sounds like you guys did a pretty good job reassuring them. And I had to laugh at Chris, you gave somebody a gentle little smackdown in the chat, yeah?
I did.
Tell listeners about it.
Basically, there was someone that said that, quote, the girlfriend bracket plays the worst magic I've ever seen. Mm. And I was like, what? Okay, that's kind of a little uncalled for. So I tagged him in the message, and I was just like, well, we're playing a deck in a format that we're not familiar with, so we're trying to do the best that we can. And I said, it must be nice to live in a glass house. And he said, how do you like my stone collection? And I was just like, do you like my stone collection? I was like, sure do. And I said, try not to hurt yourself on the way back to Irrelevantville. And, like, I'm not trying to be a dick, but it's like, who are you that you're saying this? Like, I don't understand. And then, like, then they apologized. And they were like, I'm really sorry. You know, it takes a lot of courage to play a deck in a format that you don't really understand, especially in front of a lot of people. And I appreciate what you guys do and all the people in CSL. So it was like, how did we get from one to the next thing? But I guess. But I think that's one thing, you know, to point out is that we may not always be the best at all times. But really, I mean, that's not exactly what CSL is supposed to be anyway. Right. But even just to give like a background perspective to, you know, we're all piloting various decks, not just us, the professor, MTA, Gabby, everybody. And maybe we do make a mistake, or, you know, maybe we're making some funny banter that, you know, we find amusing, or that we're bouncing off the person that we're talking to in commentary and other people aren't for it, or, you know, they make comments and it's like, it's one of those situations where I would like to see them do better. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, until you're there, you really don't know what you would do. So I think it's nice every once in a while for Twitch chat to kind of have another perspective. It's like, I don't want to fight anyone, but I think everyone should kind of mind their P's and Q's a little bit. I mean, these are people that are giving you free entertainment and people that like to do what they like to do, and we're asked to be a part of this because of the things they do for the community. And so I just think you should be, you know, cool to your community and appreciate what they do for you. So that's my two cents on that.
Amen,
yeah,
sister.
And definitely, like, doing coverage for the first time, I mean, I'm not, like, somebody who gives speeches every day or anything, so even though I'm just talking to a computer screen, when I know that there's 3,000 plus people listening, it's like, oh my god. Like, I have to be funny this whole time and kind of witty and also know what I'm talking about. And hopefully Chion is understanding what I'm talking about. And I've never actually talked to him in person. And it's just, it's very nerve-wracking. And I feel like just, you know, an average person. So I hope that people remember that when we're doing this, we're just like you, we're just like everybody else, normal people. And so, yeah, we're going to make mistakes and whatnot. There was a couple of people who had made, like, some slightly snide comments about some of the stuff I said, and I just ignored it. But I hope that people understand that this is not something we just are used to doing all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are people on the roster that definitely do this full time. You know, obviously Marshall's a coverage person, and Wedge is somebody who, you know, now makes his living in front of the camera, and Maria and Megan are very seasoned individuals. And, you know, I think that we are probably the least experienced in the group, and I don't mean anything shady by that, but, you know, we are primarily podcasters, and, you know, we, you know, have not been podcasting that long compared to some people, and we don't necessarily have the professional backgrounds. Like, I work in an office during the day. Like, I work in finance. So, you know, there are some people that do this in other areas of their lives, and that's why they're so polished, and that's why they're so great, and that's why we love them. And so, you know, but like I've said before on the last show, for me, this is just fun. Like, Chris and I were having a blast. Like, there was no, there was no, like, you know, there was no, oh God, what are we doing? Oh God, we've lost. We were having fun watching Paul do his thing. We got to enjoy, you know, we never had played with top before, so we got to spin the top. I screwed up Mystical Tutor, and I laughed at that. And, you know, we were just hamming it up. You know, we were just having a good time. We didn't even really have Twitch open, I don't think. And, you know, for us, this experience is just fun. Like, we just get to play people we've never, we will never get to play against, and just have our names attached to something great like this. And, you know, it's not that we are trying to lose necessarily, but we're just hamming it up. We're just here to have fun. It's just me and Chris in our sweats, and we're laughing and just, you know, trying new things. And I think, you know, the people that do enjoy watching us, I think that's what kind of shines through, is that we're just kind of here to have fun.
Yeah, it was definitely a blast. Afterwards, I kind of felt like I had a rush, like my hands were just a little bit shaky, and I was like, I did it. We made it through. Everything was okay. So it was good.
Well, I know that you had thought about, I know a while back you talked about possibly trying to get into coverage, and I don't think anything ever came of that, but did this sort of maybe reignite that fire in you? Like, would you want to do this again?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely, after getting my toes wet, I feel a lot better about it going forward. It'll definitely still be nerve-wracking, but I think once I'm out of school, it might be something that I pursue further.
You should. I think you'd be great at it.
Thank you. I might try it.
Yeah, I would definitely watch. So, Chris, you got the opportunity to crack open some EMA the other day.
Yes. Yes, I did.
And how did that go?
It was a lot of fun. My friend Ben has a friend named Dave, and he had a box of EMA that he wanted to draft with a bunch of people. So we got a pod together at Ben's house, and we decided to do a draft in, like, the pit of hell because it was so warm up there. I'm, like, wiping myself with a hand towel, trying to, like, draft with the other hand. It was, like, insane. My strategy going in was to try to build elves if possible, because I had heard as an archetype that it was pretty awesome. So I was able to get my hands on a decent amount of elves that did some really cool things. And I actually ended up with one Bloodbraid elf that I actually ended up splashing for. I'm like, it's the only red thing in here, but I'll do it just because it's awesome. I ended up with three Elvish Vanguards, and that's the one that's a 1-1, and whenever another elf enters the battlefield, you get to put a +1/+1 counter on it. Ooh. And I was drawing it so often that I was like, there's another elf. Trigger, trigger, trigger. And so that was pretty great. So, like, my dudes were getting, like, super big, and people are like, I don't want to deal with that. That is a problem. I'm like, it is. And then I was able to get two thorn-wheeled archers, and that's the 2-1 that has reach and death touch. And that was pretty good, because I figured if I face any flyers, they can block, so make them have to make a choice because it does have death touch. So I figured that was a pretty good threat to have. And then I was only able to get one of them, but Timberwatch Elf is a pretty baller.
Yeah.
I was able to pump with it, because if you tap it, it's a 1/2. If you tap it, target creature gets +X+X until end of turn. Yeah, where X is the number of elves on the battlefield. So at one point, someone chose not to block. So I was like, whoop. And I gave it like +6/+6 or something. And I was like, this is awesome. So I was like drunk with power. And probably my MVP of the game, actually, or like overall, was Gaia's Blessing. That card is sick. Like, I know it seems like it probably isn't, but I just thought it was pretty awesome, because I'd be like, okay, Gaia's Blessing. So I would target myself, shuffle up to 3 target cards from his or her graveyard into his or her library, and you draw a card, and when it's put into your graveyard from your library, you shuffle your graveyard into your library. That didn't happen too often, but it was pretty awesome to be like, even with the Bloodbraid Elf, be like, cascade, get into the Gaia's Blessing, draw another card, and maybe I got like a seal or something like that. Then I'd play the seal, sack a bunch of seals, and the seals give +3/+3. And it was just awesome to like swing out for 9, 12 sometimes. And I just felt like really, really good about my deck. And I ended up playing the first game versus like a blue-white, like semi-control deck, but I felt the gentleman that I played against, super nice guy, but he had Jace the frickin' Mind Sculptor. Like, the Jace of Jaces. And he was just zeroing him, and I'm like, but, and you could... okay. And I'm like, there's other things you can do. And he was like, this is the only one I know how to do. I'm like, oh my God, I just want to do everything with it right now. So that was kind of like, oh, it's like, let me have it. Just let me touch it. Oh, it would just be awesome. So I ended up beating him. Then I played against a gentleman that he was totally living my dream of like drafting all the shrines. But he ended up dying to his sulfuric vortex, like, oh, no. I think both times. Yeah. And he had the red shrine that lets you ping either your opponent or a player or a creature. And every time he just kept choosing me, and I kept verifying and be like, you know, targeting. And he'd be like, you. And I'd be like, okay, but I have all these derps. Okay, this is fine. So he had the black shrine and the red shrine. The black shrine I was a little more concerned about because I would have to discard some things. But I ended up getting a bunch of lands, and I'm like, this is fine. I'll discard two lands. This works. Because he had the two shrines, and I think it's you have to discard cards equals the number of shrines you control.
Yeah.
And so that was a little interesting. And then I went on to play someone who was on a black-red sacrifice type of archetype. I mean... he splashed white, but I don't really remember what the white was for. I don't even think I really saw him play much of the white. But either way, he had Wake Dancers and Dragon Eggs and getting dragons out. And that one sorcery that has you both sacrifice a creature or whatever. So I was losing some of my creatures right out the gate from that. We ended up agreeing to split before... we played it all out, and so I ended up losing to him. But we split three packs each, and that was pretty awesome because I ended up pulling some sweet stuff. Like, I got a top, and that was awesome, and like a couple other cool things. And all in all, I had a really good time. Like, I would totally draft with those people again. I thought that EMA was really fun to draft. There is the downside that it's a little expensive, but if someone just happened upon a box and they were just like, hey, I want to draft this with a bunch of people, I would probably, you know, maybe buy into it or just draft it for free like I did with them. And he kept all the cards, obviously. But yeah, I had a really, really good time. This will probably make me want to draft maybe more in general, like maybe as like a once a month type thing. So I was definitely down for it.
How did it feel to cast Bloodbraid Elf?
it was I don't know, it was like this magical experience where I was just like, oh, I'll cast this card, oh my god, and then I get to cascade into this, whoop, and like I would always, and it would, whenever it would hit, it would always be like the first card that I had, so I didn't really have to lose anything, which was awesome. And then I'd be like, oh, it's a seal, oh, it's a guy's blessing, oh, it's a this. And so I would go ahead and cast it and then just like swing for a shit ton usually, because at that point, maybe they had swung at me with all their creatures. I top decked a Bloodbraid Elf, played it, cascade, woohoo. And it was just like all the fun times. And I'm like, man, this card is so sick. And considering I had never cast one up until that point, like I can see why they banned it. But at the same time, I think you would just be fine if they unbanned it. Yeah. Like, Modern would be able to deal with it perfectly fine. And that new art, so pretty.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Love it.
Yeah, it was definitely daggers when it came out because they were releasing it. It was so beautiful. And it's like, oh, but you can't use it in you know, the format you want to the most. And it doesn't really see a lot of play in Modern, unfortunately. But Shardless Agent does. And being able to cascade into an Ancestral Vision and not have to pay for it is just kind of sweet. And... yeah,
maybe one day.
I mean, Tabernacles are what now? 1500?
I'm like clutching my chest just thinking about it. It's so painful. Like, I'm looking at legacy decks I would want to build. I'm like, well, if I don't want to do lands, maybe I could do this. Oh, this is really cool. Oh, hey. Oh, shit, that's the online price. Ooh, how much is this deck in paper? Oh, God, this hurts. Maybe not.
Well, I mean, maybe if you took all the money that you spend on, like, all year, how many Eos lip balms do you have?
You know, it's really not about how many. They just look very nice together, like they belong.
I'm just saying, if you maybe, like, you know, funneled some of that money that you put towards the makeup or towards the playmats. I gave you 3 playmats the other day. Maybe you could, like, you know, stash away some money and eventually you'd have a legacy deck. I'm just saying.
I know. That's the goal. But with the playmats that you did give me the other day, I am currently at 94.
Sweet
so
Jesus.
The goal is 100, and then we'll kind of see what happens from there. Because even the other day, I was considering, I'm like, what other playmats do I really need? And I realized there aren't any that I really need at this point. I think I'm just going to stick to, like, exclusives. Like, if there's an event, like the mats that RK Post does. Oh, my God, that new one that has Elesh Norn on it. Dear Lord, I died.
There's an Elesh Norn one?
Oh, yes. It's for this weekend.
I may need that one.
Yes. So I was like, all right, contacts. Someone help me. Brother up. So, yeah. It's beautiful.
So I went to Friday Night Magic the other day, and I took Li Shi Tian's Modern Dredge list to FNM. And I love the fact that I've become, like, the voice for Dredge. Like, anytime anything even remotely Dredge happens, I get tagged. And so I was flying to Columbus when he first posted the article, and my mentions, like, blew up. It was like, Aaron, can we get a comment? Can we get your opinions? Your thoughts? And I felt like I was some celebrity, and I had to hold a press conference for the Dredge deck. And so I didn't like – I actually really liked his build quite a lot. I didn't like the previous versions with Vengevine and Gravecrawler and things like that. And Vengevines are still surprisingly hard to get your hands on. So I really liked his more streamlined version. And I went 3-1 with it. The deck is just bonkers. Like, you know, being able to, you know, survive a Supreme Verdict or come back from a Supreme Verdict simply with a fetch land. Like, you know, the opponent will Supreme Verdict and they're like, whew, that was close. And then you're like, play a land. And then all the blood gas come back. And then at the end step, all the prized amalgams come back. And you're like, you've lost nothing. And there were times, even this weekend, I was playing online on turn 3. I had dredged into a Narcomoeba and brought back 3 prized amalgams on turn 3.
Wow.
And I was just like, this is so much fun. And so I ended up facing the only deck I lost to was Grixis Control. And that was only because he had Crypt Incursion. And I powered through the first one. So, like, he gained, like, for 30-some life. And I was like, that's okay. We're still in this. I've got a couple. I've got 2 Blood Ghasts and a couple Stinkweed Imps that I'm going to have to hard cast. But I'm still in this. And so I managed to whittle him down to 10. And I thought I was good. And then he goes, Snapcaster Crypt Incursion. And I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, I can't get through a second Crypt Incursion. So I couldn't get through him. But I did beat Infect, which felt really good because Ad Nauseam has an abysmal Infect matchup. And I just completely owned Infect, which felt good. And then I beat Glittering Wish Ad Nauseam. And then I beat Jeskai Control. And the deck is super fun. Insolent Neonate is busted when it comes to Dredge. It's such a good card. So if you're thinking about getting into Dredge in Modern, this is a really, really good deck. It's pretty affordable, too. Like, I think the really only expensive pieces are the Blood Ghasts. But the prized amalgams are still cheap. The Grave Trolls might be a little pricey. But I think it's a pretty affordable option. And if I keep doing well with it, I think I'm going to take it to Indianapolis in August.
Cool.
Yeah, so I had a lot of fun with it. And I traded, we get prize packs at my store, and I was able to trade the prize packs in for an Eternal Masters pack. I didn't open anything great, but it just felt good to crack a pack. Mm-hmm. So, Hallie, you had an exciting weekend. You took part in a coverage summit?
I did, yeah.
Okay, what was that?
So the Coverage Summit was basically a conference for all the Wizards contractors who work on coverage. The writers, the video coverage people, the producers who make all the back-end stuff possible. So basically all these people from all around the world, some of whom had never actually worked together, all met up in Seattle for one weekend of just learning, I guess, exchanging ideas and learning how to do our jobs even better. And it was really productive. We had a lot of really great conversations, both big group conversations where everyone was in one room for Q&A sessions, and smaller focused sessions just with the people who do our jobs. So I was in a room with other writers where we were peer reviewing each other's writing. We were learning how to better use the cameras to take better pictures of the people we're interviewing, and just gaining a lot of really important knowledge for what we do.
Okay, and it seems like you got to rub elbows with some really cool people. Like Gabby was there, Simon Gertzen was there. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a lot of really, really big names there. What was that like?
It was really cool. I got to talk to Rich Hagen for a little while. I got to talk to Brian David Marshall. He was actually someone I wanted to meet for a while because he's also a New Yorker, and so I've always wanted to talk to him about the Mets and, you know, just compare notes on, like, which pitchers we like best, stuff like that. So that was really cool. I just got to meet a lot of really lovely people, and I was surprised at, you know, how many people went out of their way to introduce themselves to me, you know, the newest person on the team. It just made me feel really valued and like I was on equal footing with people who have, you know, been in the company for so much longer than I have.
Mm-hmm. So what were some things that you took away from it in terms of, like, you know, you had mentioned that other people were looking over your work, and were there any things that you, you know, want to work on or improve on going forward?
The photography workshop was actually the most useful thing for me because I am a writer. I've always been a writer, and I'm very confident in my writing skills. But one thing that, you know, some people who read coverage might not know is that all the writers are responsible for taking their own photos of their interview subjects and of the players at, you know, a GP or a pro tour or what have you. So I'm not actually a very experienced photographer, and I have a lot to learn in that area. So having a photography workshop and getting feedback on my photography skills was actually something that I was really looking forward to going into that weekend. And I feel like I have a better perspective on that going forward. But otherwise, it was actually really great to hear a lot of positive affirmation, actually, and that, you know, some of the articles that I have produced were well received and that I'm doing a lot of things right.
Awesome. You did have a friend there that you knew, though, that you were really good friends with. I understand you ran into Brago.
I did, yeah.
And was it a happy reunion?
Oh, yes. It was the happiest. We obviously had a little bit of downtime. We were in meetings for 9 hours, and after that we had the evenings to just kind of bond, I guess, and just hang out and blow off some steam and draft some Eternal Masters, as it was. So we all got together, we got a pod together, and I second picked a Brago. Someone passed it to me, and I was just like, well, I have to do it. He's my boy. And I got past a Brago, and immediately after I was past the Brago, I was past a Manowar, and like, okay, I'm doing it. And I had some really fun games where I got to, you know, with Brago on board, first main phase, play a Peregrine Drake, untap my lands, play something, I don't remember, and then attack with Brago, get in, blink the Peregrine Drake, untap my lands, and, you know, leave up a counter spell or something. And it was great. I love Brago so much in this format, and I like the Blue-White Flyers deck quite a bit. So I was really happy to be in that archetype, and I had some really fun games. I played against Melissa DeTora, who had a ridiculous 4-color double Maelstrom Wanderer deck.
Oof.
Which was really, really good. I got very lucky, I think, in my matches against her. I drew a Pacifism, and I had a Brago, and so I was able to Brago the Pacifism onto her Maelstrom Wanderer, which ended up saving me a lot, and, you know, drawing timely mana wars to bounce things and get that big tempo advantage. And I also got to play against Nate Holt, who was a really lovely, really fun opponent to play against. Like, we were just joking the whole time. And he actually had the Elves deck. Like Chris said, the Elves deck is really good, and he had a lot of great pieces for it. But I ended up taking the match out of three, and it was a really fun, like, one of the most fun interactive matches of Magic that I've played in a long time. So it was super fun weekend all around.
That's awesome. I was so happy. It was so interesting because you guys, from what I understand, it was meant to be like top secret. Like I had seen people say that they were flying to Seattle, but they wouldn't say why. So like I know that Stibs was in the air, MTA was in the air, and I was like, okay, what's going on? This can't be a coincidence that these people are going to Seattle, but they wouldn't say why. And so I ended up asking Stibs. I was like, Stibs, what's the deal? Like Gabby just landed in Seattle. Is there, PAX didn't get pushed up, did it? And he's like, it's supposed to be a coverage conference. And then I asked you, I was like, Hallie, are you at the coverage conference? And you were like, how did you know? And I was like, I asked Stibs. And so it was my impression that it was supposed to be, you know, kept somewhat secret. And it seems like the lid kind of got blown off of it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware. I wasn't sure how secretive it was supposed to be. I didn't see anyone else talking about it, so I didn't talk about mm-hmm. it. But I don't actually know.
No, I think we were all just happy to see you there because I think Neil, one of the Australian coverage guys, he was mm-hmm. taking these really nice black and white photos mm-hmm. and it was just so nice to see you there. You know, we talked mm-hmm. about being able to rub elbows mm-hmm. with people and it was like, oh, there's Nate Holt and there's BDM and there's Hallie. And like, it just made us feel, again, we were very proud of you that you were invited to participate in that because, you know, you're our friend and we've always known what you're capable of. And it was just nice to see you, you know, at a level we think you belong at.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to touch on this a little bit because there was a bit of a kerfuffle surrounding the coverage summit as well, because there were some people who felt like either that people were invited or should have been invited that weren't, or that they seemed like it seemed on the outside looking in that it was all fun and not necessarily work. You know, I don't want to get too much into it, but like, did you want to touch on that a little bit? Just like some of the feedback that was coming in from, you know, from Twitter and things like that of, oh, look at them, you know, eating Doritos and they're probably not even working. Like, you know, did you want to touch on that just a little bit?
What I can say, I will reiterate that we spent 8 hours in meetings.
Sure.
And we had our day was structured so that we, from 9 to 5, we were in meetings. We were discussing ways to make coverage better. And that was what we were dedicated to for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And after 8 hours of meetings, we had a good time. And I think, you know, part of this weekend was for us to get better at our jobs. And part of it was for us to bond with each other and have great chemistry with the people we were working with. So I'm really glad that there was a little bit of pleasure to go along with the work.
Yeah, that's something I can attest to, you know, even when I was in the Community Cup, is that Wizards loves to spoil people. They love to take people out. You know, every night that we got done with doing the Community Cup, they were taking us to karaoke. They were taking us to dinner. You know, we were spoiled rotten. And I thought that was so wonderful. And so, you know, that just kind of comes with the territory. Like, I don't think it's anything unique to you guys. I think it's just the way that, you know, they really like to roll out the red carpet for people and they like to be hospitable. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think it kind of seemed like a no-win situation because you know that if Wizards didn't do anything, you know that the public would be mad about that too. They're like, oh, you know, they took those poor people to Arby's, you know, cheapskates. And it's like, well, what were they supposed to do? Like, if you did nothing, you know, they would be seen as bad hosts and they would be seen as, oh, they don't even appreciate their coverage people to treat them to a nice dinner, you know. But then if you do have a nice dinner, if you do have a nice draft, then the opposite is true of, oh, you know, they're not thinking of us poor people playing these games. We have to, blah, blah. And it just seemed like you weren't going to win either way. But I completely agree with you. I know that you guys were definitely working your butts off, and I was just happy that you were a part of it.
I was happy to be a part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just happy. I can't wait to see more of your work, and like I said, I think you definitely belong there.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of belonging at Wizards of the Coast, Melissa DeTora made an announcement today. She's back.
Woo.
Melissa back.
Yay.
She got a contract for, I believe, a year to go back mm-hmm. to R&D, and a big announcement was made. She was so happy. I'm happy for her. And then Reddit, everybody's favorite place. news got to Reddit, and there were, you know, some comments about it, and they were a little distressing to read. There was the usual tagline of, what are we going to do if Melissa's gone? There's no women in the community. What are we supposed to do? And then there were the people that felt the need to comment more about her relationship or lack thereof or what have you. And then there were people who brought in other female personalities, like Emma Handy got mentioned at one point. And I was just a little bothered by all of this, and I just have some feelings about that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think we all have some feelings. I'm also really happy for Melissa. It seems like she is where she wants to be. She wants to be working in R&D, and as long as she's happy, I'm happy for her. You know, she's someone that I respect immensely. She was, you know, instrumental in lighting that fire in me to pursue competitive magic. And if she's doing something that's good for her, I'm really happy and, you know, supportive of that. But on the other side of that, you know, she's a pioneer. She's done so much for women in magic. But I hate that every time she makes some kind of professional decision, the discussion surrounding it, it just serves as a painful reminder of just how much further we have to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really get frustrated at the idea, and this has been perpetuated for a while. I'm really over the community's need to find a woman magic player and name her the Chosen One. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Melissa has been the Chosen One for a long time. You know, Jackie had it for a little while, but, you know, the community can't seem to get past the idea that there are other female magic players other than Melissa. And Melissa's fantastic. I'm not taking anything away from her. But, you know, again, that the issue came up today. There was, I assume it was a lady magic player, and she replied to the thread, and she goes, "Well, if Melissa goes, I have no one to look up to." And when we started the show, one of the reasons that we created the Women of Excellence segment is because there are women everywhere that maybe just don't have the visibility. And so, you know, when I see things like that say, well, oh, there's no women in coverage now, Melissa's gone, or there's no female players that you can look up to because Melissa's gone, that to me almost feels offensive or like an insult, because there are so many women out there who are grinding and have been grinding and have been here this whole time. You know, whenever a woman does something really good in magic, people like to make it seem like she just popped out of the ground. Like when Emma Handy first got big, they're like, oh, she must have just started playing. No, Emma had her nose to the grindstone for a long time, and, you know, only recently, you know, got her visibility because she decided to really focus on the SCG tour. Gabby Spartz, I knew Gabby when she was little Gabby playing in PTQs, you know, before she had got picked up by Channel Fireball. These women have been here. We've been here the whole time, and either people just don't know where to look or they just don't want to look. And, you know, so the idea that there can only be one, you know, and that all of these other women just aren't here or that you haven't seen them is really frustrating to me. And also the idea that there can only be one when you pit women against each other. You know, there were a couple times where we were doing Community Super League, and I think it might have been a joke, but I wasn't sure, where they were like, well, it's MTA versus girlfriend bracket, only one female podcast can win. And it was like, why? Like, you know, like, we're huge fans of theirs. Like, there's totally enough room for, there's room for MTA, and there's room for us, and there's room for Elantris, and there's room for Shimehe, you know. And so the idea that there can only be one female pro player, there can only be one lady commentator, there can only be one lady podcast, it's just ridiculous. And I feel like that's something that it all comes back to, that Chosen One mentality of, if there are more than one, if there is more than one woman out there, then there can only be one. And, you know, if one goes, and someone has to be ready to take her place. And there really is enough room for everybody. There's enough room. There's enough support. You can be fans of Sprankle and MJ Scott and Air Bubbles and, you know, whoever you want to. And the idea that there's this weird loyalty there, I just don't understand it. And I just get really frustrated when I see, you know, that Chosen One mentality get hashed out over and over again.
Right. There are lots of ways to compliment someone without disrespecting other people.
Right, and you just don't see that with the guys, though. It's like, you know, you don't see somebody who's a big fan of BBD, or even, you know, Brian Brown DeWin, and they're like, well, I guess I can't like Brad Nelson because I'm a Brian Brown DeWin fan. And it's like, absolutely not. Like, you can totally love Brad Nelson and Brian Brown DeWin and Reed Duke, and you don't see that with the female magic players. You see people, you know, taking sides. You see people putting all of their stock in one name, and they're like, well, I really like Emma, but Jadine's kind of nice, too, and oh, I'm so sorry. And it's like, what? Why? Like, I just don't understand that. It's just something I feel that we don't see with the guys very much, is you can like them all, but for whatever reason with women, they feel the need to just choose one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wish that the people who were on the, like, there's nobody else to look up to camp would team up with the people who are like, oh, we don't need more women, like, visibility. Like, you guys, we know you're there. Just stay where you are. Don't come any further. Like, maybe if they could just get together, then they would all get all of their issues hashed out, and the world would be, like, one big happy family.
Chris, did you have any feelings on that?
Yeah, basically, the one thing that I kind of took away from the whole thing is, why would you want to take something that's really positive for someone and focus on negative things or try to, like, steal their thunder, I guess, a little bit. You know, Melissa is very committed to the gaming industry overall. I mean, when I got a chance to meet her in Minneapolis, we were both super psyched to meet each other. And just talking to her, you can tell that she's committed to Magic. She's committed to gaming in general. And she just has a passion for that. And, you know, I'm not surprised that she went back to Wizards. I know it was something that was really important to her that she wanted to do if they would have her back. And, you know, either way, regardless if she's, you know, doing R&D, if she goes back to the grind in another year, she's still doing something that's important to her, and she's still helping further the gaming industry in general. And I think that's awesome. And I think to focus on, you know, aspects of her life that are personal, or, you know, to make it sound like she can only be good at one thing is just kind of, I guess, kind of shitty. It's like, well, if you really do support her, then you'll focus on the positive things and you'll focus on, you know, bringing her up instead of trying to tear her down or put her in some awkward position. You know, we should be happy for those around us that they're making awesome progress. And I also think, you know, the same as you guys do, where it's like, there can be multiple people that are awesome at many different things. And I think that to focus on one person, like they're the be-all to end-all, is kind of the wrong thing, too. I mean, it's just like anything else with actors, with, you know, sports people, with other personalities. You know, there's always up-and-coming people that are going to bring a new perspective, a new insight, a new challenge, a new ability to a game, a series, a movie, whatever it is. And I think that you should be trying to focus on, you know, the future and not just on the past, because they all end up tying into each other at the end of the day.
Well, it's also a lot of responsibility to put on one person. You know, again, this is something you don't see the guys really have to deal with. It's like, you don't see, you know, you don't see Brad Nelson tossing and turning because, you know, oh God, I got to represent all men, or I've got to represent all North Dakota players. You know, he doesn't have to do that. But for what, when you put all of your eggs in one basket, and when you say to, you know, in this case, Melissa, when you say, okay, you are our official representative and you have to represent all women and you can't lose, because then they're going to think all women lose, and you can't be mean, because then they're going to think all women are mean, and you got to smile, because we really hate when y'all don't smile, and it's a lot of pressure to put on one person to be everything, you know. And I've certainly felt that as a personality in this community, even though, you know, I'm not necessarily as big as Melissa, but I've even felt that pressure of being a trans role model, a trans personality, or just a personality. It's so much pressure to, you know, do what you want to do, and then whatever the public thinks of you, and then they think they know you, and you're also doing things that are already draining in this community, you know. So if you're working a job like R&D, that's taxing to begin with. Now, on top of that, you're having to deal with expectations of you, this public image of you. It's a lot. And, you know, if you're creating content, you know, I record 2 shows a week, you know, plus have a full-time job. And if I want to go to an event, that's energy I'm spending to be competitive. On top of that, now I have to be a representative. And, you know, I don't think people realize how stressful that is, on top of everything else that we do in this community, to have to think about that, and to have to be, you know, be represent all trans women, all women, all gamer girls, all whatever. It's a lot. And it's just something I feel that we really don't ask of the guys very much. And in a way, it kind of sets you up to fail, too. It's like, you know, because, you know, people are bound to buckle under that pressure. And then when they do, it's going to be like, aha, let's take her down. And it's just it's really vicious. And it's hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm. I could never be a celebrity.
I'm sorry. You got recognized eating cheesesteak in Indianapolis.
I know. But I mean, like, I can't imagine being like Angelina Jolie and having like the paparazzi following you and people like going through your garbage and stuff, be like, whoa, like, we're just people, go away.
You know what's funny? I was talking to someone the other day, just very casually, about, like, you know, relationships, because I've been single for a long time, and we were just sort of discussing, it was the first time that it had ever come up in my life, of what would you do if you met a guy and he wasn't visible, like he was not a personality, what would you do? And I really had to think about that, and I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want to drag him into my cyclone necessarily, but it's like, you know, could I go to a GP and hold hands with him? Like, what if, you know, I know that there are people who don't care for me, and I would hate for him to get dragged into whatever I'm going through. And, you know, God forbid that we fight and Twitter finds out, they're like, oh, you know, we're going to go after Aaron's man. He's not going to take our Aaron down. You know, there are some risks that come along with being a public person and just trying to date and, you know, trying to have a personal life, trying to have a private life. And this was the first time that I ever had to consider, like, what I would do if I met somebody, because I have a lot going on right now, and I don't know, I can't blame somebody for not necessarily wanting to be a part of that.
I can understand that. This is why we need MTG tabloids.
Oh, God, that's the last thing I need. Someone's going to take a picture of me having a judge call, and they'd be like, you know, Aaron and L3 judge make loving glances at each other, page 12. And it's like, no, I was just doing a judge call. Like, fuck. And, you know, or like they'll have a picture of like the four of us, but like we will just happen to be looking away. And it's like, you know, the girlfriend bracket, tense dinner at GP Tupelo, page 5. And it's like, we just were waiting for the check. Like, there was nothing going on. And, you know how it is. You just read into everything. I wouldn't want that.
Like, somebody in the Twitch chat when I was doing coverage was just like, I don't like her face. It looks weird. And I was like, turn to page 13. You can see more of Katie glaring at the camera.
Plastic surgery disaster. Homegrown Bozeman remedy goes wrong. Well, there is one woman that is being herself, and she doesn't give a damn what anyone thinks of her. Her name is Emrakul, and she's back.
Hey.
And she's out of fucks to give. So they officially announced today, there was a story that came out called Emrakul Rises. Emrakul is officially the antagonist behind Shadows Over Innistrad and coming up Eldritch Moon. The card came out, Emrakul, the Promised Land, beautiful art. I love the art so much. We finally got to see the set symbol for the new set. She is a 13-13 who costs 13, which I believe is a throwback to Triska Decaphobia. Mm-hmm. If I understand correctly. Mm-hmm. And so Emrakul, the Promised End, costs one colorless less to cast for each card type among cards in your graveyard. And then when you cast Emrakul, you gain control of target opponent during that player's next turn. Chris, you love doing that.
I know.
And then after that turn, that player takes an extra turn. And if that's not enough, Emmy is flying, trample, and protection from instants. Not bad.
Better bring your stasis snares.
I mean, Mono Blue Tron needs
it. I mean, a Ruinous Path would do it too. So, you know, what did you guys think about this? You know, there was some discussion about whether or not people were disappointed by the reveal that Emrakul was the big bad. There were some people that felt like the card just wasn't as exciting. Like, what are you guys' thoughts on this?
I'm not necessarily maybe surprised it had been speculated on, but I still think the card looks awesome, seems awesome, and I'm willing to give it a try. I mean, it was one of those things where it had been speculated on for, what, half a year? More than that? So, you know, whether or not it was just as predicted, where a lot of people were like, oh, I had no idea that it was going to be Emrakul, you know? It's like, well, maybe not, but doesn't mean this card still can't be cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel for those people that, like, had hoped beyond all hope that it was, like, Merit Log or whatever, however you say it.
I was on Team Merit Lage.
Totally. Yeah, I was pretty sure it was Emrakul as well. I know Chaz Anders wrote an article for Wizards where he broke down a lot of the art and looked at some of the clues in the card art for Shadows Over Innistrad, which, by the way, really masterful undertaking from the artists for that set. It showed a lot of extraneous limbs coming out of some of the characters' hands, I guess. Tooth Collector, one of the prominent ones, has like a little tentacle kind of coming out of his sleeve. There was a lot of pink and purple colors used, which are associated with Emrakul. So there was a lot of foreshadowing there. I personally was on Team Slivers. Not just because I love Slivers. I think they're great. But when I saw those little cryptoliths, something about them just reminded me of, like, the heads of all the Slivers, yeah. You know? And so I was like, huh, I wonder if maybe the Slivers are on Innistrad. And I was just hoping that maybe I was right about that and all the Emrakul people were wrong. But alas.
Yeah, I had heard all of the talk about Emrakul for so long that I saw it today and was like, oh. All right. I don't know. I think that the Eldrazi just don't turn my crank, and I'm just kind of, like, ready for the next thing. But I know I'm not the only one that shares that sentiment. But I think I'm going to try and play a lot more limited in this next, I don't know, phase of my life. I think I'm not going to have a ton of time to keep up with Standard for sure, so I'm going to try and draft a lot and do a lot of Sealed and try and keep up that way, because I do like drafting, and I miss it, and hearing Chris talk about her sweet EMA draft. I have not drafted it yet, so I'm kind of itching to do that as well. But when I heard about Emrakul, I was like, well, I don't think it's like a very good draftable card unless they put a lot of ramp in. So we'll just wait and see what else they have.
Yeah, I was in the camp that didn't want it to be Emrakul initially. Like, when I first saw, like, the warning signs and I was seeing the posts, I was like, oh, no. Like, can it be Merit Lage? Or can it be... Can it even be Liliana? Can she have some great plan that she's brewing? Or, you know, maybe Giralf and Giza and things like that. And then when I saw Emrakul, I thought the art was just beautiful. Like, all of the art that I've seen associated with Eldritch Moon is just gorgeous. There were pictures of Bruna and Gisela being merged into this big freak-ass Eldrazi angel. And they're calling it, like, Brunella, which is a distant cousin of Munda, for those who are listening. Brunella! Brunella! It'd be wonderful. Just, you gotta bring the gefilte, because Emrakul's coming. That's what you gotta do. Brunella, come on now. So that was the first thing that came to mind for me. But I love the art. I'm actually kind of okay that it's Emrakul. I think the card is really sweet. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. I love the fact that they're kind of... It looks like they're setting Liliana up to be an anti-hero. Because from what I saw, I guess the dead are sort of immune to Emrakul. And so I think it's really cool, sort of like how Chandra's like the, you know, when they had the Oath of Chandra and she was like, yeah, I guess I'll join the Gatewatch. Like, I can see Liliana being that kind of, you know, reserved, like, all right, fine. I guess I'll raise the dead and help you out. Like, and I love Liliana, so I'm completely here for that. I'm also really hoping that we just get to see some other archetypes, because I'm so sick of humans, and I'm so sick of tokens. And, you know, if we're going to have Innistrad, we need to have some werewolves. We need to have some vampires. We need to have something other than humans doing well in Standard. And if Liliana is going to have such a big role in the story as they're making it out to be, I really think there needs to be some good, either some reanimator type effects, or we need to see a zombie deck in Standard, because I don't think you can have Liliana be such an important character and then just have the format be humans. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping for, at least. But I'm really excited. Like I said, the art's beautiful. I thought the story was really well written. Shout out to Kimberly Cranes for that. And I'm anxious to see where it goes. I'm anxious to see who dies. Like, I'm surprised to see the number of people who want Sorin to go. and I'm also surprised by the number of people who don't agree with Nahiri. Like, I'm totally team Nahiri.
Me too.
Yeah. Because let's be honest, we've all been Nahiri. Come on. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you get my call? Oh, you know, I just had this hell vault. You did not. Like, let's not even do that. Our listener question this week, be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We've gotten several awesome questions lately. And reminder, they don't even have to be about magic. We will help you out with anything that you might be going through. And this question is from a young man named Adam. And Adam says, hi, girlfriend girls. The exact words. First off, I love your show and I love you guys. I listened to the show in order and just finished the last episode last night, which was a little while ago. But now I have to wait a whole week for a new episode. This is when we were on break. Okay. P.S. I'm still waiting for Aaron to get on board with Snapchat. Well, wait no longer, sir. I am there waiting for you to snap me. Anywho, my question. How competitive should we be in casual kitchen table magic? My friend says magic is first and foremost a game, and we should try to make the game as fun as possible for all players and not just the winners. He said we should strive to win, but should not attempt to decimate our opponents, well, shit, wholly and completely without giving them any chance of winning. He's also strongly against sideboarding in casual games. I agree with him 100% except for the sideboarding part, but, and he emphasizes the but, magic is a living, ever-changing game, and we can contribute to the evolving nature of the game by giving our opponent the biggest challenge we can come up with. If we both have awesome decks that are fun and win 50-50, then we will have oodles of fun with these decks today, tomorrow, and next week, but it will be the same thing day in and day out. The same creatures, the same enchantments, the same decks. And 3 months later, magic will just be an epic footnote in the history of our friendship. Why not just watch the same movie over and over again? What are your thoughts on this? Thanks.
I don't think there's a correct answer to this question because everyone's kitchen table is different and everyone wants something different out of magic at the casual level. Adam seems to want a buddy who's going to challenge him to play better and build better decks. And there are going to be players who are happy with the decks that they have and just want to do that. And both are definitely valid. I would say that I'm definitely in the same camp that Adam's in. When I first started playing, I actively wanted to play as much as I could and against as many players as possible with the goal of getting better at Magic and eventually moving beyond the kitchen table, which I did within a matter of months. But, you know, if you do want to be a kitchen table player, I think there's definitely room for either approach as long as you have playtest partners who share the same goals as you.
Yeah, I think that in this case, it kind of sounds like they do have very different goals and what they want out of the game. What my brother does, he's a very, very casual player. He plays the occasional pre-release and just kind of has a big box of Magic cards and makes decks from it. And he'll invite people over and he'll have made like 5 or 6 decks that are all kind of the same power level that he thinks are all pretty fun to play. And then they play against each other and those decks end up being pretty 50-50, and it's not just one that wins every single time, and they kind of cycle through them. So that might be maybe a happy medium, like maybe one person can make both of the decks, or you can make them together and kind of play those together. But also, you know, finding somebody who does want to have their deck evolve and who wants to sideboard and have just a constantly, you know, evolving game. And there are certain things that some game stores do where they have a very casual league where you get to play a different person every week or whatever it may be, that he could also get involved with, because it seems like right now they're not having as much fun as they could since they're both trying to play slightly different games of Magic.
For me, I don't see any problem with sideboarding either. I mean, I figure you're both bringing in things that are going to target things in your opponent's deck that you're not particularly happy about. So I think that's kind of on an even playing field. So I would maybe suggest Adam to have his friend try sideboarding, you know, see, you know, if maybe he just really wasn't into it at first because maybe he felt that it was unfair in some way, but maybe not to discount it completely. The other thing I would say is I like Katie's brother's idea of having all these different decks that are on a similar power level so that one person doesn't feel like they're getting decimated. I kind of like just the dual deck anthologies for that reason, because if you're just wanting to play for fun, it's already pre-made. You know, you can just whip them out, play them, be done. I also think, yeah, building decks with your friends can be fun because then you can kind of decide, you know, kind of what you want to do. And then if he wants to be more competitive, you know, than perhaps his friend does, then he could certainly have, you know, kitchen table rules that they both, you know, abide by when they play with each other, but maybe look into some other options, you know, maybe playing Commander with a group of people, like an LGS would be something awesome, because he could still do wild and crazy things and still, you know, have a good time, challenge himself. So there's a lot of different options there, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, each of you brought up really good points. You know, Chris, I like your suggestion of just using the dual decks, because I've done that before. You know, there was a guy who recently moved to Milwaukee who was looking for new friends, and we had very different power levels in terms of decks. Like, he had a modern deck, but I think it wasn't, you know, it wasn't very good or very competitive, and here I am rolling in with ad nauseum, you know? So we just weren't able to be on a level playing field in terms of playing, but, you know, he really wanted people to play with, and so he would bring the dual decks, and he would bring, you know, the clash packs and things like that, and we just had really goofy fun, and those decks are really good. Even the Commander decks, you know, the pre-constructed decks are really good, you know, if you want to make sure that you're on the same playing field and that you really are just kind of in it for fun and not necessarily, you know, for really spiky reasons. I would also, you know, Hallie brought up a really good point as well about just, you know, kind of being the kitchen table being subjective and the social contract being different for everybody. You know, when I play Commander, I like playing really YOLO Commander, where, you know, you're just trying to do dumb things and, you know, you want to just live the dream. You know, you want to do things with 9 mana that you normally shouldn't be able to do and just throw up your hands and go, wee, and that's my kind of Commander, you know. When somebody shows up with an infinite combo, I don't have a good time with that. And so, you know, it's really important for me when I do get into formats that I know can be kind of subjective, I try to make it very clear what I'm getting into. So if I knew that I was going to be playing casual Magic with somebody, I would want to know what their definition of casual is so that I know that I can be that, or that I know that they're going to give me that experience. And, you know, it does sound a little bit like your definitions or your interests might be changing a little bit, Adam. Like, it sounds like you know, might want to be, it sounds like you might be kind of inching a little bit more away from the casual while your friend seems to be digging their heels into it. And so I would just want to make sure that, like, just kind of reaffirm, like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is your version of casual. This is what I'm into. And if they don't sync up, you know, either find a way to readjust so that they do, or maybe you know, just finding different people to play with as well. Like, hopefully that doesn't come out wrong. But, you know, you just want to make sure that you're both kind of honoring the social contract and that you're both on the same page. Because if you're not, it can really be a bad deal. Anything else before we wrap up the show?
I have an announcement. I'm going to be doing video coverage for a Modern 1K at Card Kingdom next Saturday. So I guess the day after this airs.
That's fantastic. Cool.
Yeah.
Yay. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
I'm excited.
So are you going to be casting? Are you going to be, like, controlling the camera or...
I'm going to be casting along with one of our local L2 judges who is a good friend of mine. So I'm really excited about it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Cool. I'll have to tune in and watch as I don't have anything planned this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Twitch.tv/Card Kingdom.
Look at you with the subtle plug.
What time does it start, Hallie?
Hold on one second and I'll tell you. You can cut this out.
I feel like we should just leave in every segment where somebody's like, oh, just cut this out. It'll be fine.
Saturday at 12 p.m. I don't think I'm going on immediately. I'm going to be rotating in after another caster is going to be on. But yeah, 12 p.m. is going to be the start of the stream.
Cool.
Well, I think the really important question is Kirby going to be there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, would they let him around all that expensive equipment? I don't know. Also, this L2 judge who I'm going to be casting with is one of Kirby's favorite people in the world. Oh, yeah. He just loses his mind when he sees him and, like, jumps on him and starts licking his face. And, like, Kirby doesn't do that to everyone, but he just loves Casey so much. So I don't think Kirby could be trusted in such close proximity to him.
I mean, I for one would love to see, like, a Kirby Watson coverage team. Just saying.
Oh yeah,
I would love that too.
They would look sharp in, like, some little tuxedos. Yes. With their little headphones on.
Oh my god, I'm just picturing that.
And the little lapel pins that, you know, the SCG guys usually wear.
Oh yeah.
I'm telling you, if anyone's listening, make that happen. There is an audience. Just saying.
The puppy PPTQ or something.
Right. Aww. Right.
Like the puppy bowl.
Puppy TQ?
Oh my god, yes.
Puppy TQ. Oh.
Cut, print, Emmy. Come on. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. And you can find my writing on, I don't know.
A variety of places,
yes.
You just, like, Google me. Katie?
Oh, I thought she was, like, finding... Sorry. I thought she was finding a link or something that she wanted to read off. Are you done, Hallie?
I'm done. Gathering Magic Daily MTG. I'm done.
Oh, man, we should just cut the whole last part of the show. And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. I have to make up for this because I didn't say it last time, and Katie pointed it out to me. So yes, find me on Snapchat. Send me all of the snaps.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. You can Snapchat me now at Original Estrus. Hint, hint. I'm going to be checking for my phone. If there's not pictures there, I'm coming for you. Saying. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email the show at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Support us at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening to us, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.